Welcome to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. I'm your host, Lillian Koizumi. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. For Ikeda, the more severe the challenges we face, the more crucial it is that we persist in dialogue, because dialogue has the power to break down the walls of mistrust, hatred, and division in the hearts of people everywhere. We hope you will join us in this endeavor to transform our world one dialogue at a time. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. Today, we are doing a special episode about how to have conversations on difficult topics. In recent years, many folks in our community have shared deeper challenges around engaging in dialogue, whether due to the increasingly divisive society we live in, or just the lack of emotional or mental capacity to engage with others. So today, we're going to listen to two short and scripted dialogues, and then we'll get to unpack them together, discussing useful strategies, key components that could have gone better, and connections to the Ikeda Center's dialogue commitments and ground rules. I'll be inviting my colleagues, Henri, Pri, and Sophia to join me in the studio today. So first, we're going to dive into a relationship conflict, something that's probably happened to everyone at one point or another. This is a dialogue between two longtime friends, Madeline and Jordan, who are each sensing a shift in the dynamic of their friendship. Madeline feels like she's entering a new phase in life and is lacking the bandwidth and energy for old friends. She appreciates Jordan as a great friend, but feels her priorities in life are changing. Jordan, on the other hand, doesn't want to disconnect from Madeline. She wants them to grow together. Since this isn't happening, Jordan feels like she's carrying the burden of their friendship as it grows increasingly one-sided. Now, Henri and Pri are going to run through the dialogue, playing the characters Madeline and Jordan. Sophia will give us some context. Afterwards, we'll all come back together and unpack the dialogue.
Madeline and Jordan have made plans, and Madeline cancels last minute without really giving Jordan a reason. So the two schedule new plans for the next week, and as they're grabbing lunch together, Jordan starts to voice her concerns.
Hey, Madeline. I'm so glad we could do this today. I guess I wasn't really sure what was going on last week, if you're okay and everything.
Oh yeah, I'm fine. Sorry I had to cancel. Things just got really hectic and I wasn't, you know, sure if I had time.
Sure, and it's fine, I guess. It's just kind of feeling like this happens a lot lately and, you know, like the week before last with you not coming to the concert and I don't know, I just don't see you very much anymore.
I know. I've just been so busy, you know, with my new job starting next week, and I...
Sure, but I changed jobs last year, and I didn't, like, cut you off. I just feel like you don't care about me anymore.
I'm not cutting you off, Jordan. I'm just exhausted, okay? You know, things are kind of unstable for me right now, and I don't really have the time.
I know. I'm sorry. I just want to help. I mean, I have things in my life, too, right? And, like... We always deal with stuff together. We talk about stuff, you know, and isn't that the whole point?
Yeah, I mean, and thank you. But part of that, I think, has to be figuring out when I maybe need to refocus, you know?
Refocus on what?
I'm trying to take my career to the next level. I'm meeting new people. I have to network. This is a whole new world. It feels like I'm entering, and I'm just figuring out how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, it's no big deal.
It's not that I don't...
You know, I shouldn't have even brought it up. Don't worry.
No, listen, I care a lot about you, and you know that. I'm just a little busier right now. I need to focus on expanding, you know? Meeting new people, figuring out this new stage.
Okay, but that doesn't mean I'm your backup. Like, it feels like I'm always just waiting for you. Like, I'm your last resort, and I'm always free and available and excited to hang out with you, and I just... Just because I've known you longer than these new people that you're meeting doesn't mean you can treat me as a backup.
Well, I don't mean to, but I mean, this is kind of the point of a long-time friendship, right? That they'll always be around, even when things change. Maybe you should just try to make new friends, too.
Wow. Okay. So you ignoring me except for when you have literally no other options is my fault for not being busy enough with other friends?
It's not your fault. It's no one's fault. Just maybe, I mean, I'm getting busier. Maybe we're just in two different places right now.
Well, it's not no one's fault, but okay.
So maybe we just need some time.
Need some time? This is just... We're just friends. This doesn't have to be some big dramatic thing, Madeline. I'm just saying I want to see you more.
Well, I'm not the one making it dramatic. I'm just saying I do love seeing you, but right now I don't really have time to hang out as much as we used to. This is normal. Friendships go through stages, right? It's not like it's all or nothing.
Okay, but you just keep saying that about different stages and different places. I'm trying to tell you that the place I'm at, I don't want to grow apart from you yet. Or ever. Why are you, I don't know, acting like it's natural to just grow apart?
Not for good or anything. This isn't huge, okay? I just need you to give me some grace. There's only 24 hours in a day. I'm juggling my new job, new connections, my family. I think part of being a good friend is respecting what your friend needs, not just what you need.
Well, and vice versa.
Okay. But sometimes those might be incompatible, and that means if I'm going through a rougher time, just cut me some slack and try to help, and I'll do the same for you within my bandwidth.
That's all it is. I just want to help. I just want to talk to you, you know what's going on in your life.
I guess. Yeah, that makes sense. That might not be how I need help right now.
So you're saying you need me to help you by not spending time with you?
No, not completely. Just respecting the space that I need. And I want to talk to you. I want to debrief you on everything. I just can't always block off a ton of time all at once. But maybe we can try to plan something, I don't know, like weekly?
Are you thinking like, I don't know, like the same time every week?
Yeah. Let me see. So I think I'm free most Wednesdays at lunch. It'd only be an hour because I have set up at 1 and meetings until noon, but we could...
That sounds great. And I never meant to beg for more time with you or something. I guess I just wanted acknowledgement that I kind of felt like I wasn't seeing you much.
Yeah, I know. And I am sorry. I never meant to use you as a backup. I guess I know our relationship is solid enough that we don't really have to worry about ever not being friends, you know? But maybe that made me deprioritize it a little bit.
And that's okay. I get it. I think part of me, maybe this is dumb, but I'm maybe just a little freaked out by all the changes happening in your life. You know, all the connections you're making, this new job, and I guess I'm feeling kind of behind.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think this just happens sometimes, you know. When you moved last year, I honestly kind of felt the same way.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I don't know, it passed. I was really happy for you.
And I hope you know that I'm happy for you, too. I've just missed you a little.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Wednesday works great then.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I imagine many of us listening could resonate with this conversation. I've definitely been, I think, both Jordan and Madeline at different times in my life. And so now I'm going to invite Henri and Pri to step out of Madeline and Jordan and come back into the studio as Henri and Pri, and then Sophia is here as well. And so all four of us will discuss this dialogue a little bit. So hi, Henri, Pri, and Sophia. Welcome into the dialogue studio officially. And so, yeah, what did we think about that conversation?
First, kudos to Sophia for drafting these great conversations because, wow, talk about, like you were saying, relatability of the characters. Though I was playing Jordan, I definitely felt like, yeah, this happens so much in so many spheres of people's lives. So, yeah, just a quick shout out.
And thank you both for voicing the actors so well. I think that the characters really came through there. I think that the tension here is really that, you know, no one's really in the wrong. They clearly both care a lot about each other and are struggling to, you know, how do we manage this relationship stage going forward to, you know, what I want, what you want, and how we can meet each other's needs by somehow forming a compromise, even if that seems a little cold.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely, this script was so authentic in that it really does show the care and love for these, that these two friends have for each other. And I think sometimes in relationships where two friends are closer to each other, it's hard to have the courage to bring up things that bring up discomfort. So one thing I really got from this script was how much courage it really does take to express your true feelings of hurt. And sometimes we feel embarrassed that, you know, Jordan just like missed her friend and the way things were, and to be able to bring that up. I think that's such an important part of dialogue, to really believe that by bringing up something that is uncomfortable, it's going to make things better. So I think that's one thing that really stood out to me.
Yeah, I resonate a lot with that point, Henri. I think, you know, one of our ground rules for genuine dialogue at the center, number 8, which is we will strive to courageously share our thoughts and stories with the belief that what we have to say matters. And I think I thought about a lot about this particular ground rule during this conversation, and especially in this moment in the dialogue that I really resonated with, which is when, you know, Jordan and Madeline are having this back and forth, and there's this moment where Jordan's like, you know, I shouldn't have brought it up. Don't worry about it. And you can almost, like, I could see myself in those moments just like wanting to shut down because maybe I'm not feeling heard, or maybe I think the person's just not understanding me and I don't want to get hurt anymore. So I'm just going to disengage and almost give up on the conversation. And I feel like in that moment, there was maybe inner tension for Jordan of like, should I still share? Like, I took me all this courage to really voice my true feelings, and then maybe it wasn't going exactly as I hoped. And so do I continue or do I not? And then I really appreciated in this dialogue that Madeline, you know, acknowledged maybe she still didn't fully understand or agree, but she like first said, no, listen, like, I care a lot about you. And I feel like in those moments when someone does that for me, it creates the space, which kind of ties to ground rule number 2, which is to create a space where we can be vulnerable and imperfect. And I feel like in that moment, you know, Madeline was able to do that for Jordan. And then Jordan, after hearing Madeline's response, could sort of decide, okay, I'm going to continue to share, even if, like to your point, Henri, sometimes it is embarrassing, right? You don't want to be the person in the friendship who cares more. Like, you want to be like, oh, I'm cool, I have other friends too. But oftentimes that's not how we really feel. So to be able to like have someone that you could share those genuine feelings with and not be totally rejected, I feel like is really great. So hearing this conversation just made me think about ways where I can also not give up in those difficult moments, and on the other side, recognize when those moments are happening for a friend and hold space for that. So those two ground rules came to mind.
Yeah, as you were sharing, I was just also thinking about how Madeline's character, she's just such a strong grounding figure, but I think it also amplifies the friendship they had before entering the conversation. You can really feel that. I mean, I imagine in Madeline's position, you can feel kind of caught off guard all of a sudden being told that you unintentionally hurt your friend's feelings in some ways. Yet, as you were highlighting, her ability to kind of come in and clarify the truth that maybe is easier for her to tap into coming from a not as an emotional place as Jordan allowed her maybe to do that, but also her curiosity, I think, to really, even in this tense moment, to listen. And Jordan, too, like her curiosity in the ways in which she kind of, you know, clarifies. Sometimes the way she clarified things was very, you know, edgy a little bit. But the fact that, you know, through whatever friendship they have, they were able to still lean into that tension a lot more was really beautiful to witness. And it really felt like a celebration at the end. You know, one of the ground rules is to acknowledge and celebrate the effort that we all took to show up today, and for them to like coordinate this time to meet, I think, is a celebration of that, where it's like, this dialogue maybe in this way ends here, but the resolution or the action that they take as friends who do genuinely both care about each other is this next hangout that they're going to have. So it was really beautiful to see the ebbing and flowing of how both Jordan and Madeline's valid emotions were held safely and respectfully, even if there is a little bit of sass from Jordan here and there.
And on both sides. I mean, I think they both had kind of this impressive arc in like under 10 minutes of this dialogue where, you know, Jordan started off very, very gentle, easing into the conversation, which was a great tactic to, you know, keep Madeline from closing off immediately. But, you know, she quickly gets a little bit combative with, you know, well, I changed jobs last year. I didn't cut you off. And then, you know, muttering under her breath, she's a little annoyed or, oh, it's my fault for not being busy enough with other friends. She gets really annoyed and bothered by the middle of this conversation. But Madeline is kind of able to talk her down in a sense back to here. Wait, that's not really what I meant. It's not your fault. I'm trying to tell you I love seeing you, but I need us to go through a new stage of this relationship. And I think that the minute Jordan is able to kind of recognize that and say, okay, I'm at place X, you're at place Y, how do we find a place in between those to exist together? They're able to kind of grow through that. And then Jordan has this arc kind of back down towards, you know, being calm and clear and telling her, you know, I just want to help. I just want to be a part of your life. And maybe we do that every Wednesday at lunch.
Yeah, I love the solution they came to because it really leaves the door open for kind of the expansion of their own friendship. And number six for our dialogue, ground rules for genuine dialogue says we will listen to one another with curiosity and courage to expand our awareness and understanding of each other. And I think that will be like, you know, they're imaginary characters, but in friendships, you know, that will be a continuous thing that people have to continue to learn from one another and expand their awareness and understanding. No matter how long you know someone, it will be like this evolving relationship. So I think it's so great that they had this moment to really engage in this dialogue so that they can set the stage for the new friendship that will emerge.
Yeah. I know there's like a lot of love for Madeline. But I do want to call out Madeline for this one moment in the dialogue. And it's just because, I don't know, when the line came, I just, like, felt so triggered. But there was this...
Let's talk about the bad part.
Like, I know Madeline was trying to be calm throughout, but I think she also got to this point where she was maybe irritated or just, like, wanting to tell Jordan, like, come on, it's not such a big deal or whatever. Anyway, so it's when she says, maybe you should just try to make new friends too. I was like, what? I can't believe she just said that. And I feel like we've all, in those moments of feeling like, I don't know, like maybe Madeline felt misunderstood too, or felt like Jordan didn't really get her. Like, she's just trying to expand her life and advance in her life, so why doesn't Jordan just do the same thing? And I don't know if this directly connects with ground rule number seven, but, you know, ground rule number seven is we will not devalue or put down anyone's experiences. And I don't think Madeline was doing that. But I feel like in that moment, like if I was Jordan, that's not what I would want to hear. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not telling you this because I'm not trying to make new friends. I'm telling you this because I want to be your friend. Mm-hmm. And so in that moment, maybe, I mean, I think we say things and it's okay, but if I were to give any feedback to Madeline, that would be a place I'd be like, maybe you could have, you know, yeah. If she was thinking about it from the perspective of Jordan, then maybe that wouldn't have come out. I think that maybe was an emotional response, which then like provoked this emotional response from Jordan, you know, but then they were able to come back. So, yeah, it all worked out in the end. But I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
But I also think Madeline is kind of this passive, like, very, you know, rational, not emotionless, but, you know, less emotional than Jordan, especially in this moment because she's a little caught off guard. Yeah. She didn't plan this conversation. She cares, but she didn't, you know, see this as a problem. And so she's saying, you know, just frankly, I'm expanding my world. You should too.
Right.
And she has this concept of like infinite love and, you know, this, you know, she can expand her world while caring about Jordan just as much. But, you know, there is an infinite time, as they both mention, and they just don't. She's not devoting the time. And for me, that really ties back to ground rule number one. We will give each other the benefit of the doubt and trust that we're all doing the best we can. Because while they do that in this dialogue, you know, the whole point of the dialogue is Jordan's calling out Madeline saying, you know, you're not doing the best you can. To me, it feels like you're not doing the best you can in life as my friend with me. And I think she's able to call her out about that and express that feeling while still giving her the benefit of the doubt to explain her experiences and her side, her perspective in this dialogue, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you calling Madeline out, Lillian, actually reminded me of a personal experience I had in a similar context where I was kind of a Madeline. Mm-hmm. I have this really great friend of mine from middle school. Mm-hmm. And when we were going into high school, I forgot the reasons for why her parents put her in a school different from the one I went to. I think it was she lived closer to that high school and I lived closer to the one I went to. I don't remember. But I definitely, knowing that I was making new friendships, leaned into the just meet everyone I can. And like, I know my friends will always be around if I need to like tap back into that. And so I was doing that. And I remember, I don't remember if it was a text conversation or if like we had it in person. I think it was text because I don't remember having it in person. But like she had expressed how, I guess, the challenges or the sadness she felt around, like in her mind, even though we were going to different schools, she thought we would like text each other every day about everything. And I think as I got busy, as much as I wanted to do that deep in my heart, I was also trying to learn how to do that with the new friendships that I was making. So I remember feeling kind of like Madeline of just like, oh, well, if you, I didn't say this to her then, but I remember feeling like, but if you were doing what I'm doing now, you would get like why I'm not texting you back immediately or all of these things. So that was middle school. And like middle school identity building, I feel like has its own layers of complexity. But I guess this memory made me think how in my older years, I feel more like a Jordan, maybe because like the way we socially become more aware and individually become more aware, just it just shapes things in a way that feels different. And that difference can be experienced by people in different ways. But I was just thinking about like, why did I feel more like a Madeline then? And why do I feel more like a Jordan now? And maybe 10 years from now, I'm going to feel like a Madeline again and then a Jordan 10 years after that. I don't know. But it's such a, I guess, a close the thought. I also wonder, sometimes there's this fine line between a comment that's made to like save yourself from being painted, not as a villain, but as someone that you're not trying to be, versus saying something to create space for you to then also be able to like share your truth more honestly. Mm-hmm. Like maybe there's some blurry line there that sometimes, or because of friendship, you can navigate more healthily than when you're talking to a stranger in a similar context. Mm-hmm. Though I guess that wouldn't happen with strangers, but just some thoughts.
Yeah. Hearing you, Pri, I don't know, I just had this thought, unrelated but related, that even this conversation itself between Madeline and Jordan is like, is really wonderful, because there are, as you get older, right, and things happen, like let's say one person cancels on the other over and over again, I feel like a lot of times in real life, like these dialogues may not actually ever happen. Mm-hmm. Right, people may just slowly have their friendship like fade out, or you know, just over time, you're like, oh, wow, we're not close anymore. And sometimes people don't even have the, as I shared earlier, like the mental capacity or the time to be like, okay, I'm going to meet so-and-so and tell them how I actually feel. And that often doesn't happen. And then, right, friendships change. And then people kind of just say, well, you know, it's life. Like, mm-hmm. you get older and you have families, priorities change. So I was just reflecting when you were sharing, Pri, like, yeah, as we get older, how important is it to have these conversations, and like recognizing that it is, it does take more of an effort to do it, right? It's not just going to happen naturally. When you're in school, you're going to go back to school the next day and see that person, mm-hmm. and have to have that dialogue, versus like when you get older, if you don't live in the same place or in the same, you know, country, then it's so much easier to not have opportunities to have dialogue. So it's just making me think about whether or not, one, okay, do I want to have more dialogues with those people in my life that I feel like friendships have changed? And if I do, yeah, just what are some ways I can really continue to challenge myself in that area? Because mm-hmm. life is really busy, you know, but definitely sometimes in moments of pause, or I'll think of a friend and be like, oh man, like, I haven't talked to them in a while. And what have I not told them? Mm-hmm. And would I still want to tell them that after all this time has passed, you know? Yeah.
I was just going to add to that. Like as time goes on, and say you don't see your friends that maybe you're like thinking about, I always think of about this whenever I get like a message from someone that I haven't talked to for a long time or seen for a long time. And like, there's never a point where I feel like, man, why did they reach out to me? You know, I always feel like, oh my gosh, they were thinking of me. So I feel like in more cases than not, like, the response will be positive, but it's just our own maybe hesitation or worry that maybe this person will be upset at me, you know, because it's been so long. But, you know, when I think about, like, how I feel when I receive messages or phone calls randomly, I feel like, yeah, it is a great idea to, like, continue to reach out. You know, any connection, I feel like, is such a great way to expand our own lives and feel uplifted. Mm-hmm. So as you were sharing, I was thinking of that, like, oh, well, I never feel, like, bad, so I should do that more too, you know, for others. I'm usually more like the wait and see what happens. So.
Yeah, I love that addition. I was kind of thinking on the flip side too, you know, if you're in a moment in your life when you feel like you need to have this dialogue, in some cases, you know, you just kind of grow apart from someone and maybe you grow back together that way and you don't have to have a dialogue. You just kind of each had your separate stages and didn't need to talk about it. But if you do, I think this is proof that, A, it can happen in, like, under 10 minutes. It can be super chill and people can go through, you know, being upset. They can mutter things under their breath, but you'll get through it in a quick amount of time and then you'll have a weekly lunch date. And on the flip side, it kind of operates as a test, if that's the right word, for, you know, if you initiate this dialogue and your friend is just completely closed off, unwilling to even speak, then you can kind of reassess, you know, do I care? Maybe I'm in a new place or they're in a new place where we just aren't compatible as friends anymore. And I think that that is kind of a secondary indirect value of this sort of conversation. Mm-hmm.
Compatibility is probably a whole episode for another time. But in you saying that, I just also thought about how there are some friends who, for some reason, you don't have to talk to for years, months, you know, put your whatever timeline and you catch up and it's like no time has passed. Mm-hmm. Versus there are some friends who it just requires more. I hesitate to use the word effort because it's not always the same kind of, like, I need to, like not sacrifice, but, like, it's not the kind of, when I use effort in the context of friendships, I think it's more the balance between what you put out and how much of it is reciprocated and kind of that journey. But there are some people who does take more of that out of you. And so I'm just curious, like, if there's been some studies on what role that plays. Because we talk about compatibility when it comes to romantic partners and, like, marriage and all of those things. And it comes up in the context of friendship, too. But I think dialogue helps us even become friends with people whom maybe if we only hung out with people we were comfortable with or compatible with, that we wouldn't otherwise. And right. So it's, like, a very, yeah, powerful vehicle to just get to know another in their, I think in a previous podcast episode we called it Naked Humanity or something. Like, you really get to see another way of being in ways that might challenge you but that are oftentimes very rewarding.
Yeah. And the whole purpose of dialogue, right, is not just to dialogue with people you're compatible with.
Right, right, right.
So, like, dialogue is a tool to engage in dialogue with people you're compatible with, but also with people that you're not compatible with, but still be able to reach some kind of deeper understanding or respect or whatever the goal is. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I was thinking to kind of wrap up this part of our conversation. We didn't plan this, so I'll give you all a little bit time to think about it. But I was thinking, you know, the purpose of our episode today, right, is to think about difficult conversations that we might have in our personal lives through first this one example of, like, a relationship conflict. So reflecting on the conversation we just had and the dialogue between Jordan and Madeline, if we look at our ground rules or our commitments, what's maybe one from this conversation that you want to practice more or explore more in the context of having difficult conversations? What's one that you feel like, oh, this one would be really helpful as you think about actual conversations in your own life about difficult topics?
Wow. That's such a great question. And it immediately made me think about the commitment that says to listen to and learn from others. Mm. Because, so I love talking. And I think I'm also more of an emotional person. Like, I lean into how I feel a lot, even in relation to others, even by myself. And especially in tense moments, I can get very defensive because I forget to really listen to what the other person's sharing. And I'm immediately thinking, like, what can I say to, like, in air quotes, save myself? Like, this is not who I am. Why is that how I was perceived? Is just where the, I guess, insecure part of me kind of explodes. And so through this conversation, it just really made me think how that's still something I'm working on, that I want to really become more powerful with. Because when it's comfortable, I'm a great listener. And I try to be a great listener when it's uncomfortable, but there is still that part of me that's like, I want to run away, or can we, like, end this conversation? Or, like, I get emotional. The first thing that happens is I cry. Like, whether I'm happy, sad, mad, maybe less for happy moments, unless it's a movie or something. But, like, I just cry. And it always frustrates me because typically crying is associated with being weak, even though I know, like, the strength and beauty in it. In a tense moment, it can feel like a moment of powerlessness where it's like, if I don't know whether or not someone's going to give me the same grace or space, then I feel like I lost this opportunity to, like, convey what I think about the situation because I'm overwhelmed by emotion. So I just, yeah, it made me want to practice that commitment a lot more.
So I didn't bring up this ground rule during the Jordan-Madeline dialogue unpacking, but I think I did think of it when I was listening, and it's the one that I struggle with the most, which is our ground rule number 4, which is we will embrace new perspectives with the openness that we may not always be right. And I'm someone that I feel like I always want to be right or always think that I'm right, maybe. I don't know. But especially when it comes to this particular conversation with a friend or with a family member, like in this particular dialogue, in this moment in my life, I think I resonated a lot more with Jordan. And I feel like when I go into these conversations, I'm often like, it's almost like I just want the other person to acknowledge that they've hurt me. Mm-hmm. Or I just want the other person to say, like, no, I really care about you. I already have something that I want to hear from them.
That's how you know it was successful.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, I got what I wanted. Box you know? Tricks. Yeah, exactly. And then, but oftentimes that's not how it goes, right? And then I get, like, really upset or discouraged, and then I just completely shut down, and then I can't, like, hear anything. I had a conversation with my mom a couple of months ago that went that way. And so I really, like, in hearing Jordan and Madeline, I was like, wow, if I was like, I really like the way that Jordan was able to go from being emotional, but then somehow, maybe through Madeline's, like, compassion or just through the two of them working through it, she got to a place where she could be open to Madeline's perspective and be like, oh, okay, she could understand, hear Madeline a little bit more. So I really want to practice that myself, is to be able to, yeah, go into these conversations with more openness. And kind of related to your point, Pri, the listening part is really big for me too in that case. Then, like, how can I really listen to the other person and not go in just with the goal of sharing what I want to share with them and getting my point across, but to practice that, like, listening and the learning, you know, together. So, yeah, when you were sharing that, I thought about my ground rule that I want to practice. So, yeah.
Can I make a cheesy joke?
Sure.
I feel like we're both trying to go from a me, me, me to a wee, 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 like W-E,
W-E. Is that a joke? That,
yeah, maybe, yeah. It's just the cheesy.
It's just
pre.
Cheesy.
Yeah, I have one. I feel like I can work on all of these, honestly. Mm-hmm. There are 9. But the first one, we will give each other the benefit of the doubt and trust that we are all doing the best we can. I think kind of similarly, sentimentally to what you just shared, Lillian, I feel like when I get emotional or upset about something, I feel like, why am I working so hard, but you're not doing this, or you're not. But deeper underneath that is I feel like I'm not enough. So I feel like I have to project my own kind of, like, anger towards the other person. And even with strangers, like, if I am, like, trying to do something and I'm trying to get customer service or whatever. And I'm like, why don't you understand that I'm like doing my best and I'm like here trying to and I'm like trying to be understanding, but I feel like I don't understand at all what the other person is going through or what they might be struggling with or that, you know, they showed up and they're standing there or, you know, they're like sitting in the dialogue or the discomfort of, you know, disagreement. And I feel like I can definitely be a lot better at like maybe trying to ask questions that really get to understand the other person and why they might be responding in the way that they are. So, that would be the the ground rule I want to practice more. Mm-hmm.
I really like that, and that really inspired my choice as well. I think for me it's a combination of number one and number five. Mm. One is, as Henri shared, we will give each other the benefit of the doubt, and five is if there's disagreement, we will challenge the idea and not the person. Yeah. And that's huge for me, I think, because I don't know if it's because I'm debate trained, but but I have a tendency to, as someone speaking, to stop listening to them and start thinking of what I'm going to say, which I think we all do it at one time or another. But
you're trained.
So I'm actually a master at that. I'm the best. But especially for people that I'm very close with, who I feel like I know, and there's a level of love there to feel like you really know how this person speaks and you know their ideas and their thoughts, but that sours really quickly because I tend to, you know, not prejudge but preimpose my perception of what they're going to say based on our previous interactions. And then I'll start, you know, preparing debate arguments against them. Mm. And I think that that's the real piece for me is trying to work on removing assumptions. I make assumptions in every area of my life, and that's the piece that I'm really trying to work on is trying to kind of open my eyes to people as individuals who are constantly changing just as much as I am. And if I want to give myself the benefit of the doubt with changing my mind on something, they deserve that too. And more than that, you know, they deserve to be heard and listened to in a really genuine way. Mm-hmm. And that kind of touches on all nine, but I think that's really it for me.
Mm. Well, thank you all for answering my spontaneous question.
Yes.
And it's so amazing. Like, you know, I think that was maybe less than 10-minute dialogue, right, between Jordan and Madeline, but we were able to take so much away from it. So I hope our listeners are able to continue to process as well. But now that we've discussed that dialogue, we're actually going to dive into one more. And so Henri and Pri are going to go back into their voice acting roles. But this is another dialogue between two friends. But this time, they're not discussing a relationship-based issue. And so, Sophia, actually, can you walk us through this particular scenario?
So this time, these are two new friends, so not Madeline and Jordan, but Eliza and Isha, and these two friends are discussing a global issue. They're both really politically engaged college students, they're always reading the news, and it's early August 2025, so put yourself a month ahead, and Eliza and Isha are out for dinner. Eliza's skimming the news when she sees an opinion piece commemorating the 80th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombings on Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II. She reacts to the article, and they start to discuss.
Whoa, Isha, look at this. I didn't realize it's been 80 years.
Wow. Yeah, it's such a tragedy.
Yeah, horrible. And so impressive that something like that hasn't happened again.
Yeah, for sure. Though we've come really close several times.
Yeah, but I guess the U.S. has stayed on top, so we've stayed safe.
I mean, I'd say we've stayed safe out of pure luck. What was it, like 1 in 3 chance of nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis? All because we couldn't stop building bombs.
Well, okay, but what's really the alternative? We stop building bombs, but nobody else is going to stop with us, and then we just get attacked?
Okay, but we keep building bombs and we stay safe. More bombs equals more safety. What is that? How does that make any sense?
Well, listen, I agree using nuclear weapons is horrible, but having the weapons as a reasonable democratic country is the only thing that protects us from crazy authoritarians who would nuke us the second they got the chance.
Okay, that's definitely scary. But isn't there a way to get weapons out of the crazy authoritarians' hands too? and then we could be truly safe with no bombs at all.
And how does that work?
Well, what about through international agreements? They've worked. Look at Iran a few years ago. Look at...
Well, look at Iran now. And what? During the Cold War, we could have just signed a piece of paper with Russia saying, oh, we'll never develop nuclear weapons? Of course not.
Well, then maybe...
No, then Russia would have said, oh, wonderful, now we can attack you whenever we want.
That's not necessarily true. It's just... When the alternative is just keep developing weapons and attack anyone else who does too, we have to try something different.
I don't know. I feel like this stuff doesn't work. The U.S. has the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world, and we should probably make sure other countries remember that.
Why? For what?
So they don't attack us.
But again, we're just going in circles here. You want to build lots of bombs to prevent violence. Do you see how dumb that sounds?
I don't want to argue with you about this. I just don't think we're seeing it in the same way. I'm thinking about how we can make sure the U.S. stays safe and strong.
Oh my God, I'm so sick of people acting like the U.S. must be in power at all times. What a U.S.-centric way to look at things. Seriously, do you not even care about what happens to other countries? Like,
No. Of course I do. But if we aren't in power, China and Russia will be, and they're literally totalitarian states. Do we really want them running the world, committing human rights violations and suppressing their own people?
You know that's not what I meant. I mean, we can stay in power while respecting other countries too, without dropping bombs on them, killing hundreds of thousands of innocent
lives. Isha, I'm with you. The atomic bombings in 1945 were devastating. But what do you want to do? Just lay down all our weapons and let authoritarians run the world?
Okay, so I guess this is kind of where we agree. We have to keep people safe, somehow. But I just don't think that's the way to do it, to keep building more and more and more weapons like Russia's doing now or attack other countries like our airstrikes on Iran a few months ago.
I know, but sometimes that's the only way that works.
Do you really think that we've tried other ways, though? Like, seriously? You said international agreements don't work, but many have. And dismissing entire institutions because they sometimes don't work, when your alternative is an endless arms race, seems pretty counterproductive to me.
Maybe, but, like, how do we even enforce this stuff? It's like you don't get it. We're literally negotiating with countries that are completely untrustworthy. These are dictators who don't keep promises to, like, their own people, let alone to international agreements that, like, aren't even enforceable. How can you trust? Like, they're literally set on destroying us, Isha. Literally.
I think you need a little more faith in our institutions. We can build agreements that are more enforceable, that have mutual benefits. And isn't the goal here, like, actual long-lasting peace? How can you build peace by building bombs? Because, like, even if it works in the short run, the means don't match the ends, you know?
But do they really have to? We've built peace through war many times. Again, you know, the atomic bombings were awful, but they played a pretty important role in ending World War II. I don't really know the numbers for that case, but I do think we have to see it as numbers, right? Like, if less people die and suffer because we build weapons now, then if we don't build weapons and we get attacked later, it's worth it.
Well, you know, if we knew less people would die, but I don't know. I've never really thought about it like that. I guess I think of nuclear weapons as so all-consuming. They hurt everyone, innocent people. How can that ever be worth it? And then what about miscalculation? What about, you know, you'll never be able to calculate that if it would kill less people. You just have no way of knowing.
But I know how devastating it would be if we were unable to protect ourselves. Okay, here's how I see it. I guess I was always taught, do what you have to do for the situation you're in. And also, protect your own people. Everybody matters, of course. There's no doubt about that. But for the American government, the American people matter more.
I guess that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Probably why I care so much about our international institutions, the group that advocate for everyone, not just U.S. citizens, and don't prefer certain countries over others. Although even there, like in the UN, the U.S. and other big countries have disproportionate power, I guess. So I just think at some point we all need to come together, sit down, and commit to getting rid of all of it.
Whoa. All of it? Like, all our nukes? Isha, that is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I know it doesn't really seem possible right now, but I think that has to be the end goal, like, in the long run.
But I think that's what rubs me the wrong way. Like, then how do we protect ourselves? I think we have to commit to good countries having defense systems that prevent bad countries from hurting us. And that's, honestly, that's, I think, the only way that we'll stay safe.
But how do you even define a bad country? Like, how do you know who's gonna, like...
Well, an authoritarian actively suppressing its people and trying to take over the...
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I mean is, couldn't the U.S. also turn into a bad country one day? An authoritarian actively suppressing its people, and then we'd just be another bad actor with nuclear weapons. And then what?
Huh. That's, you know, Isha, that's actually a good point. So maybe, here's what it is. Maybe we need some rules.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is we should probably try to make or build these rules before we keep building more bombs. And in order to actually commemorate the atomic bombings 80 years later, we have to make a change. It's like, I don't know, to me it feels like we're teetering on the edge, you know? We're living in the exact same, maybe even worse world that killed so many innocent people in 1945.
I can begin to understand where you're coming from, but I don't think you should rule out military action in all cases just because the end goal is peace. Like, there needs to be some sort of power, some promise of harm, kind of like a we'll attack you if you don't stay in line sort of thing in order to enforce the rules. Even if we don't like that, I don't see any other way to ensure that bad leaders who want to hurt us aren't going to attack us.
Maybe. Maybe. I guess I'm not sure about that yet.
I guess I'm not really sure either. I just don't see how institutions can really govern weapons at this level. Can we maybe come back to this? I just kind of need to think more about this.
Wow. That was a very different dialogue than Madeline and Jordan's. So again, I'm going to invite Henri and Pri to step out of Isha and Eliza and come join us together with Sophia. I want to, again, appreciate this dialogue in that, like, as I was listening to it again today, we can go into all the different ground rules and commitments, but just appreciating the fact that two people could have very opposite opinions but be in dialogue. I think that's something we've been talking a lot about at the center, is like, how do we have conversations where the goal is not necessarily to agree with each other, but how do we disagree but still engage in meaningful dialogue? I think is something that, you know, we're grappling with, and I think our community is grappling with. So Sophia, I appreciate the dialogue you scripted here, because I think it really highlights the possibility of engaging in dialogue with someone who you disagree with, but still be able to somehow, in some ways, right, respect and listen to the other person. Like, there's moments throughout the dialogue where I was like, oh, that's that. I can practice that when I'm having a conversation with someone else. So, yeah, what did everybody else think?
I really loved this one. I think that they're really taking clearly a strong relationship, you know, that existed beforehand and bringing it into a conversation like this. I've had conversations on this topic and many others with a lot of friends, and I've found, you know, you can have a conversation like this with a stranger, and in some ways it's easier because there's no relationship that you're set on preserving. You know, there's no, you know, some level of politeness, but beyond that, there's nothing really to preserve there. But honestly, these are often easier with close friends who take you at your best and, you know, take your arguments in good faith and understand, you know, I know they're a good person. And so here I can listen to their views without, you know, attacking, which ground rule is that, you know, attacking the idea instead of the person, number five, I think. Yes. And I think that's so key here. And, you know, both of them really do slip some here. You know, Isha's like, you don't care about other countries at all. And Eliza's like, well, you don't want to keep us safe at all. But at the end of the day, they're really seeing the humanity in each other. And I think that's the only thing that really makes this dialogue work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just re-listening to it, or, you know, going through the script again today, I was thinking how interesting it is. Like, they start off kind of on the same page, right? They're looking at this 80 years since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they both feel like really sad about it. And then very quickly it kind of explodes into like, wow, they really have two different beliefs, and they both want to share what they're feeling, and they're trying to like share how they feel and understand what where the other person is coming. But it's like so drastic almost that it's really hard to really come together. But I do agree, like, in this conversation, because they have a relationship, maybe they're able to really sit with it and not kind of say like, well, you're a bad person because you think we should have nuclear weapons, or you're wrong because, you know, you care about everybody, but you're not caring about like the safety of our country, you know. So there's not like a judgment that is passed, but they do still feel very strongly about the views that they hold.
Mm. Yeah, and to just speak even more again to ground rule number 5 about if there is disagreement, we will challenge the idea referred to and not the person sharing the idea. I also, after having reviewed this script again, am thinking about how whenever life and death are involved, that also, I think, makes point number 5 extra important, because I think we kind of touched upon this yesterday, but they both care about life just in a different way. And the nuances, to really sit with the nuances and talk through that can be very challenging, because when Eliza mentioned numbers, you know, it's easy, I imagine, for someone like Isha to be like, how can you make this a numbers thing? Like, well, one valuable life is one valuable life. We shouldn't compare that to, like, how many people die. But at the same time, you know, someone like Eliza might be thinking that, you know, the number of those many individual valuable lives is important. And so it's like the weight of what they both are trying to convey, like, it's equally important. But because they're so different in terms of how to kind of hold space for what is right and what is wrong, I think that's where, yeah, it's so important and powerful to challenge the idea, not the person, because it's so easy to be like, you don't care about people. And then that can take away from the true conversation they're trying to have, which I think in most cases in real life, that's what happens. It instantly becomes, well, you're us versus them, right, which is such a dangerous way to talk about important issues, because then it's like the moment you categorize someone as them, you're not trying to reach middle ground. Like, there's instantly this wall. And so with their friendship, and also with the way they were able to sit with the different layers of their unpacking why they think the way they do, it really, yeah, they put in the work. that's difficult. So I feel like that also highlights that they were courageously sharing their thoughts, which is related to number 8. And because they believed what they had to say mattered, and because of the friendship, I imagine sometimes maybe it came off harsher than it should have, but they were able to say it, I think, because they had that courage and they had that trust and friendship, and they didn't think this was the thing that was going to end the friendship.
Sure,
you know?
Right.
As I was listening to Isha and Eliza again from the top, like, because it got so intense really quickly, like you said, Henri, and then it was just kind of like this back and forth, more like a debate, right? Because you both immediately had the point to like go back to the other person with. And so I remember at one point I was like, where is this going to go? Is this actually going to be resolved? And so I was trying to think about, are there moments when like debate transitioned more into dialogue, and what were those moments like? And, there were like two in particular that stood out to me, and this may just be me, so you all may have different opinions. But the first moment, you know, again, maybe because it's speaking to my own ground rule / motto of number four, we will embrace new perspectives, but the openness that we may not always be right. And I think this one might be even harder when it comes to sort of political issues, because we are so attached to these ideologies, and we build our identity around them, right? So we already have all these reasons why we're right and very justified, right? So when that's being challenged, I think it's even harder to have an openness, because you've like really built this idea or opinion or value, right? And so in this moment when I think Eliza's saying to Isha this very real thought, right? If less people die and suffer because we build weapons now, then it's worth it, right? And then there's this moment where Isha's like grappling with that. And she doesn't right away say, you're wrong, right? She says, she's thinking about what Eliza said. And then she actually says, I've never really thought about that. And I think that takes vulnerability on Isha's end too, because some people may just not voice that out loud. They may just kind of attack back. But Isha actually said out loud, I've never thought about that. But then she goes back and gets to this point of like, you know, I just don't think that it's worth it. And then she voices this opinion, right? And so I feel like that's a moment where there's like that tension of, am I right? Or was my opinion right? What, like, how do I feel? And so she's sitting with that. And I feel like then that kind of allowed Eliza to maybe come down a little bit too in terms of like her intensity, and kind of say, you know, get, you know, this is what I was taught. So then Eliza's bringing in her personal experience. Like, I understand yours, but this is what I was taught. And so she's like sharing her perspective, and then kind of it gets tense again. And then the other point that I noticed, kind of same ground rule, is when Eliza then says to one of Aisha's points, oh, that's actually a good point. Like, I don't know how often that happens in real life dialogues around political issues. But I wish it would happen more, you know, where people could acknowledge that another person has actually made a good point. And I feel like we don't often say that. And even if we think that, we don't share it out loud. And I think the acknowledging of the other person's point without like feeling like I'm compromising my own beliefs, I think is very important and useful to use in dialogue to like kind of, is it not unarm, right? The other person, is that the way we would say that? Disarm the other person, you know?
Disarmament.
Oh, wow.
How did that come up?
Yeah. Yeah. So those two moments, I was like, wow, I really myself want to introduce those moments more when I'm in a tense debate, and I wish that it would happen more when I see conversations, debates, dialogues, whatever you want to call it, around these more hot button, like tough issues.
Yeah, I really appreciate that piece too, because they each do have this moment of growth, you know, acknowledging and maybe not agreeing with, but at least allowing themselves to sit with in a moment of silence, you know, the other's opinion. And that really just doesn't happen. You know, there's usually like snap back with a with a retort. And I do think the beautiful quality of debate is, you know, that you can form these arguments and articulate them well. And the beautiful power of dialogue is sitting and pausing and not using those arguments. And so merging debate and dialogue in this way, I think, is really incredible. And they do both, I think, you know, they're both very nuanced characters here. You know, Eliza has a lot of credit to her for Aisha is like, well, you sound so dumb. And she's like, listen, I don't want to, you know, get this heated up, but I think we can talk about this more. And then Eliza gets heated up later on. And then, you know, Aisha brings them back down. So I think that kind of going back to the compatibility piece from the last dialogue, having that established friendship, that established relationship means they, you know, they know how to bring each other up and down emotionally. And I think that's really powerful here. And thinking about, you know, how they're able to sit with having these opposing arguments on a pretty hot button political issue and, you know, even end the conversation and say, well, you know, I need emotionally or even just thinking about these arguments, I need more time. And I could imagine them having a dialogue in the future, you know, where, you know, Eliza asks Aisha, you know, what's made you feel so emotionally empowered about, you know, the lives that lost during the atomic bombings, and Aisha asks Eliza, you know, so what makes you feel so strongly about military action being useful? And we didn't get too much of that experience sharing here because, you know, it's a quick dialogue and that takes a lot of depth and breadth, but I think there's a lot of space for them to each share that. And I think that, you know, off of what you shared, Lillian, I think that's really huge for them.
That makes me think too, I'm so grateful we brought in the context of debate and dialogue and when maybe a debate transitioned into the dialogue in this conversation, because I'm having this aha moment in this moment of dialogue is a medium we use to learn and unlearn together. So there's already that space where, you know, you don't have to come in fully equipped with all the knowledge, though you'll do your best to like bring what you can. And then debate, and Sophia, you might have to correct me if I'm wrong, debate, like the goal is to win the argument. So there is kind of like, there is an experience that's had there that I think dialogue in a relational context, when you're not in an actual debate setting, dialogue can allow you to kind of bridge that gap between just trying to win the conversation, but also trying to maybe win it right. Like with dialogue, the goal is always somehow meet middle ground, even if that doesn't mean the other person agrees with you or you agree with them, but it's like, what can we say we both learned from stepping away from the space together? I'm sure that debate has a lot of those aspects too, where you learn something going into it. Like, maybe I could be more confident. Maybe I fill in the blank. I'm not much of a debater. I'm actually really terrified of debates, but I just feel like, yeah, dialogue, especially in political scenarios or really difficult conversations, gives that space of grace for us to be like, I'm coming in as I am, others are coming in as they are, and we'll figure something out, like that kind of vibe. Whereas, yeah, debate, I don't know. I feel like it gives this tense vibe to me already, because there's this, like, I have to win the argument kind of at the baseline, even if that argument is maybe not in line with what you believe, or maybe it is in line with what you believe. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know if, Sophia, you had any thoughts on that, not to put you on the spot, but.
No, yeah. And I think it's interesting. I wrote this, as Isha and Eliza are, like, you know, 19-year-old college kids like me, very interested in politics like me, probably had some debate background if you look at the way they're speaking like me. And I think that, you know, ex-debaters or current debaters tend to be the ones either best or worst at dialogue. Mm. And I think there's a lot of truth in that if you do debate right, or if you're trained in it well, it's really incredible and beautiful, because it forces you to expose yourself and gets you excited about exposing yourself to these new ideas. Mm-hmm. And it's not combative in the way that I think it's often portrayed. I don't think it is inherently I must win, but it's let me learn absolutely everything I can. Because most debates, at least the style of debate that I learned, you prepare both sides and then you flip a coin at the beginning of a debate round for, you know, which side you play. And so at the end game, you know, I've done debates on nuclear weapons, and at the end of the debate tournament, I'd know everything about both sides. And then I'd go home and sit with them and be like, wow, okay, I've had to argue both sides all day. What do I actually believe? And so I think debate is the education piece, and then dialogue brings in the experience piece. Where here, I'd say it's like 70% debate, 30%, you know, dialogue and experience. But, you know, as I mentioned, I think there's room for them to have a broader dialogue after this that is like, okay, you know, forgetting the arguments, we've heard them and we'll talk about them later, but what actually brought you to feel this way? What makes you think this way? You know, I want to know everything about you that made you this person. Where there just isn't space for that in a debate. Yeah. And so merging it, we'll come up with something. But yeah. I think merging them in this way, or even in a 50-50 balance, would be really cool. And that especially works, you know, it'd be cool to run this again with Eliza and Isha, are two strangers who are, you know, at a debate, and then after the debate round they start talking and they have a broader dialogue about the topic. And I think that's where, especially thinking about political discourse, political debates versus political dialogues, you know, what matters. Yeah.
Does political dialogue exist?
I don't know.
<I'm just kidding>.
But I do have so this is another question for you, Sophia. Actually for all of us. But because it really struck me earlier when you said that at some point you said something about how, like, in debate, you have these arguments, right? And then I think you said something like, in this dialogue, you may not use those arguments. And I thought that that was really interesting. It's like, it's almost like I heard it as, when you're in a dialogue, even if you have the argument, you might not use it, because the goal is not to win necessarily, right? So you might have the fact, but maybe you don't use the fact, because if your goal is something else, then maybe you don't use it because you're trying to get somewhere else. And so I was just wondering, thinking about that, what would you say is, like, you kind of said the goal of debate is not necessarily just to win, right? But it's like the education piece. But then what is the goal of dialogue, right? So maybe just to restate that for our listeners, and we're not experts here, so we're not like, you know, this isn't like the be
actually,
all.
This is the, like, global statement of what dialogue is. So listen to
exactly.
us.
Yeah. But yeah, like, if based on this conversation, what would you say is the goal of debate? And then on the other hand, what would be the goal of a dialogue?
I think the goal of debate should be education. I think what I grew up seeing, watching political debates, the goal was clearly not education. The goal was to publicize a pretty performative, you know, battle to get people to vote for you.
Mm.
And that is where, you know, the public forum aspect of, like, who's watching and who matters in the debate. And maybe it's not even a formal debate, but that's, you know, been taken to our living rooms in debates at Thanksgiving. Mm. And it's, you know, it's no longer about education. It's about winning.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be transformed backwards. And then in a kind of adjacent way, I think the goal of dialogue is probably connection. And to use my favorite phrase lately, common ground. Which I think can also be the goal of debate. I'm not articulating this very well. I think they both should have a goal and an eventual outcome of common ground, but debate has strayed from that in a way that good dialogue has not. But not all dialogue is good dialogue, because it's hard.
Yeah, I really thought it was so interesting that you, like, articulated and picked up on the part of, like, just not using everything you know, because I feel like in a dialogue a lot of times you have to be, and maybe in debate too, you have to be really attuned with maybe what the other person is feeling and thinking. Mm-hmm. But like you said, Sophia, maybe you're in a debate, you're thinking more of like, okay, how can I respond to this person to like convince them or sway them a certain way, versus in dialogue I feel like if you're trying to understand where the other person is at, you're trying to meet them where they're at so that you can really like convey a message. And it might not be like, I'm trying to change your mind. Like, I don't think Eliza and Isha are necessarily trying to change their mind. I think in this dynamic it was more just like, this is how I feel and I want to share it, you know. So that part was like, I don't know if you would call it dialogue or debate. It's just like, this is how I feel. But the dialogue part is like really responding to, yeah, I don't know how to say it. Just like responding to the other person's emotions and trying to like be there for them. And also like, let's both move towards this end goal. Like, let's both, I don't know, whatever it is, like it might not be agreement on the issue, but let's both get to a place where we're like, okay, I understand you, you understand me, and maybe why I feel the way I do, because you're touching the, like you're getting into the parts that are like more emotional. Yeah, so that's just my thought right now.
It's almost not a tell me what is right or tell me what should be, but tell me what this is to you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So there's this one part of the dialogue where, I mean, there's many parts. I was trying to think where this is applicable. So you know that one part where Isha goes, we should all sit down and commit to getting rid of all the nuclear weapons, right? Eliza goes, like, all of them? That's crazy, right? So maybe if we think about it from what we just talked about, if the goal is to reach common ground, to understand the other person's perspective, like maybe even if Eliza thought, that's really crazy to get rid of all the nuclear weapons, I know that's crazy, it's not possible in my mind, like how could Eliza respond differently to engage in more of a dialogue in that moment, right? Because that response is more, right?
I mean, what?
Yeah.
All the news.
That's crazy. It may be a fact for Eliza that that's crazy, but if Eliza was trying to reach common ground with Isha, not to put it all on Eliza, you know, Isha should do the same too. But in that moment, maybe she would have asked that question in a different way, you know, if the goal is to reach common ground.
Yeah,
and I was just thinking, I'm going to bring up a reference I've brought up before in our personal dialogues, but this conversation has been really helpful because debate to me, I looked up the etymology of it and it talks about how it like originates from meaning to fight, contend, or beat down, but like it later evolved to encompass the idea of discussing pros and cons and things. Mm-hmm. And so I was just thinking like, let's use pizza toppings, right? Pineapple on pizza, yay or nay. Like that's the debate. You bring up pros of pineapple on pizza, you bring up the cons of pineapple on pizza, but like you enlighten me around, you gather all you can of everything to get a holistic picture of what is it that we're talking about. And then dialogue then is the, okay, the pizza's done, maybe you decided half pineapple, or you know, it's not just one way, but you choose to enjoy the pizza together, in that like it's not about like what's better or what's worse, but you found a way to enjoy the fact that we're talking about this holistic understanding together. And so in the context of the section you just brought up, Lillian, I wonder if, like, on the one hand, I think Eliza expressing her honest opinion of, like, whoa, like, that's crazy, is still a form of dialogue because she's sharing her truth, even if that truth isn't, like, say, the ultimate truth. Like, maybe it's still in the realm of opinion. But in her bringing it up and, like, there being that space for Isha to come back, like, the fact that the conversation continued, I think, is the dialogue part. And so, yeah, like, the pros and cons, they were discussing that throughout. Or it's not even pros and cons in this context, just differences, right? Like, they were trying to understand. And then I think, like, the way they ended, which was leaving with this sense of, like, oh, I need to understand more, is the goal of dialogue, which is that they found some kind of, for a lack of words, reward in having talked about it with each other, even if that wasn't necessarily planned, per se. But because of the connection they have through their friendship and their opportunity to talk through it, I think, I imagine that inspires them, if they're in another context having the same conversation with someone else, to then be like, I did that then, maybe I could try it again. And, you know, maybe it's like, yeah, the experience of learning and growing and committing to doing that again every time is dialogue. I know I kind of went all over the place, but yeah, I just appreciate, Sophia, you bringing up that aspect of debate, because I was definitely in the camp of debate is just win the argument. But that's just because I took classes where it's like, here's the side that you have to study and present. And I didn't have experiences where they're like, study the other side too, other than, you know, be mindful of what might come back so that you could be equipped to rebuttal. But yeah, so thanks for enlightening me around that too.
Yeah, I don't know how much of, you know, personal anecdotes we should share, but I this feels all too relevant, but I had my favorite class last semester was this incredible course on war negotiation and conflict resolution, and we did an atomic bomb debate after spending weeks reading about World War II and war in the Pacific side of the war, and analyzing so many documents to understand, you know, how, quote-unquote, necessary were the atomic bombs, how critical of a role did they play in ending the war. And this class had a lot of interesting characters in terms of diversity of background and belief and every possible opinion in the room. And our professor purposefully, you know, put us on either side, put us on a side that he probably thought we would disagree with, and he did well with that. It was very tough. And then halfway through the debate, he was like, "Guys, this isn't about winning the debate. This is about figuring out what should have happened. It doesn't really matter what you think now. It's about learning the history and thinking about the future." And that was so powerful to me, because I think that really is, I love the pizza analogy, because it's about, you know, how can we sit in this and share what actually matters? Because at the end of the day, what two random college kids, maybe they'll become the president and secretary of state, but probably not. So maybe it doesn't matter exactly what they think and if they can agree on it, but it maybe matters what they can do to take action. And I think in a really nuanced way, they do come to an agreement at the end. You know, they agree, maybe we need military action sometimes. We definitely need some rules around nuclear weapons. And that's such a broad agreement, but it's still an agreement.
Right.
And so how do they move forward with that consensus? Oh, maybe they go and, you know, start at, if they really care about this, maybe they don't, but if they really do, maybe they go and advocate for, you know, some sort of treaty about nuclear weapons that preserves the ability to build them and not use them, or something that builds that common ground between them and looks forward instead of looking back. Not that commemoration isn't important, but that the way to commemorate, as one of them, I think Isha mentions, is to think about what they can do in the future. And I love that step.
I know we could talk more.
All day. I'm like trying to see, like, how long has it been? But just in the interest of time, you know, again, these are two examples of dialogues that we heard today. And the purpose is maybe to generate more dialogue around how do we have conversations around difficult topics. And so we do look forward to hearing from our listeners any thoughts you have from the two conversations and what you're processing and unpacking. But maybe at this point, I could come back to the same question from our first dialogue and return to our ground rules and commitments. And in the context of this conversation, what's a commitment or ground rule that you would like to lift up or practice more in your personal conversations?
think I'm going to pull out a commitment again, but avoid prejudging and categorizing people. Mm. That's a really big one for me. because especially in the context of this conversation, I think it's easy to think, oh, you don't care, and then fill in the blank with whatever that reason is for you. And I think that's such a dangerous statement to make if we, you know, give the benefit of the doubt that everyone does have good intentions or are good people or are thinking about, you know, the betterment of the world. Like, for me to just assume that someone doesn't care because I judged them and didn't agree with something they said is very dangerous. And so, yes, I think I know I need to work on that because even in like non-political conversations, it was kind of highlighted this morning in a check-in we do here at the center, but just how it's easy to become sensitive to people's facial expressions, emotions. I think maybe Lillian, you were bringing that up. And I just know that my prejudging and categorizing people can also be within that realm of like, I do it to kind of protect myself from what I think could help me then engage with them versus sometimes I just have to be honest. And when I don't know, I don't know. When I need to understand, I ask more questions and I just do that again until I can also feel comfortable, not just within the context of whatever conversation I'd be engaging with, but also to be comfortable within myself. So yes, avoid prejudging and categorizing people.
I'm also going to mention a commitment. I was so encouraged, Sophia, by how you ended talking about what matters is what we do. So the commitment, remember that change begins with us. I feel like all dialogues are really just an opportunity for each of us to grow. And if I learn something new from someone that I'm having dialogue with, especially if they disagree with me, I think it's just another perspective that I can have, you know, whether I agree or disagree. And then that change beginning with us just being that now I can take action, being more conscientious of not everyone is the same as me. Not everyone will do the things that I do, and just being like mindful. And I think in small ways that can really impact the way that I take action, maybe not directly, but just having that as part of like a global society, a community that we live in, that there are all different types of people, all different people with different opinions, and we all live here together. So I think that then it brings us back to, okay, so what am I going to do with that knowledge? So I think that one really stands out for me in this dialogue.
I can share mine, Sophia, if you want to close us out.
Still thinking. Yes.
So mine, I think I'm going to go with ground rule number 9, which is we will acknowledge and celebrate the effort that we all took to show up today. And I know this one was brought up earlier, but I thought of this one because I realized in this conversation that I don't think I've had this kind of dialogue recently. I've definitely had the first one, you know, with a friend or a family member, but this latter one, even though I could connect and resonate and relate to many of the points that were mentioned and the dynamics, like I don't think I've actually had this kind of tense dialogue with someone that I know. You know, I might have it like when I'm watching TV, I'm like debating the person on the TV screen or like internally in my mind, you know. But yeah, I just, you know, I think maybe some of us, myself included, like we do live in a bubble sometimes. And so, you know, I work in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I live 15 minutes from my workplace. And I just don't know a lot of people who, and maybe there are people around me that think differently than me, but we don't really go there. And I think a lot of times these days it's like, oh, don't talk about anything political because you know it's going to get like difficult. So I just appreciated Eliza and Isha's willingness to engage in this conversation. And maybe by the time they realized it was happening, it was too late. They had to like go through with it. But I guess I wanted to highlight ground rule number 9, just because I know it's difficult to show up and have these conversations. And maybe I need to find more ways to be vulnerable or curious enough where I can get into these conversations with the people around me, instead of kind of being on, you know, very surface level conversations, which is necessary sometimes too, but especially in this current climate, I feel like I'm inspired to find more ways to really be open to hearing another person's opinion. So sometimes I feel like when I know kind of what that person's political like values are and they're like opposite of mine, I like don't go there, versus having the courage to like be open and willing to have a conversation, even if it might go in a direction that I don't have really have control over. Like, how can I still practice these ground rules in those moments? I'm gonna go with number 9.
Wow, I really love what you all three have shared, and I was struggling to just choose one, so I would choose all 9 if I could. but going off especially of what you shared, Lily, and I'm looking at number 2, especially in these crazy times right now, especially, we will work together to create a safe space where we can be vulnerable and imperfect. And I think that vulnerability piece is so key, because kind of linking to Pri's discussion of prejudging people, you know, that on the other end, the fear of being prejudged or of being judged, period, is so profound. And it really just cuts off so many conversations. A lot of people go into dialogue with this fear of, as do I, of being uninformed about something. And that's one of my biggest fears around dialogue is, and I often feel like, you know, people will bring up a topic and I'll say, I'm so sorry, let's have this conversation, but give me a week to read everything I can about it first. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, that's great. You know, it's good to be as educated as you can, especially about a topic like this one, like any global or political topic. But at the same time, that space to be vulnerable and to make mistakes, and those critical moments, you know, when Isha was like, well, you know, you're right, maybe, you know, if it would hurt more people, and where Eliza was like, well, yeah, maybe there need to be rules. These moments where you're grappling with that openness, and where the other one in that moment is allowing, you know, Isha or Eliza to grapple, to struggle, and to sit with that idea, and not to say, see, so I'm right, you know, this is how I win. It's about letting them sit in that vulnerability and that imperfection. And I think that's something that really is beautiful to me, that ability to create that space where people feel like they can share their views without being immediately, you know, tied to a political party or to a group that is offensive, or immediately being called names, because that just shuts down dialogue completely. And even if you think of something that someone says as unforgivable as Eliza and or Isha might have, in any case, being able to continue the dialogue and allow for that imperfection is so critical to even having the dialogue in the first place. So I think that's my choice.
Well, thank you so much, Sophia, Henri, and Pri, for joining me in the Dialogue Studio today.
Yay!
I want to give another shout out to our voice actors, Henri and Pri. You all were amazing. And of course, our script writer, mastermind, Sophia.
So the 3 of us are off to Broadway.
Yeah, tomorrow. Exactly. Yeah.
We're done here.
And also our great moderator, Lillian.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. but I hope our listeners, you know, took away some helpful points, and, you know, maybe we'll come back again with different scenarios. And so, again, if there are any questions that come up for you all, please feel free to email us. And yeah, until next time, happy dialoguing. Thank you for joining us in the Dialogue Studio today. I hope you enjoyed my dialogue with Pri, Henri, and Sophia, and enjoyed our unpacking of these two conversations. And we hope you took away some helpful tips. We will include in the episode description a few links to resources on our website, where we introduce either our dialogue commitments and ground rules, or some of Mr. Ikeda's strategies and approaches to dialogue. If you're interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace Learning and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Thank you again, and stay tuned for our next episode.